How was downsizing? Heard terrible.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. And today's Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast is also brought to you by Draft.com. Use the promo code LOFANTASY to get a free entry into a draft with your first deposit. My name is Josh Lloyd, the lead fantasy analyst at BasketballMonster.com. And you can find me, as always, on Twitter at RedRock_Beeble. We are going to go through all 8 games from Tuesday. We're going to preview all 10 games from Wednesday. And I'm going to start a couple of things, which I hope I can keep it as recurring segments on the show. So stay tuned for those throughout the show. A couple of new segments I am going to introduce as we go through things today. And I'll have your input in those segments as we move along as well. So
let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. We will start with the monstrous line of the night. We'll also start with the waiver wire line of the night. We will also start with the young gun of the night, because it's all the same bloke, and it's Maxi Kleber of the Dallas Mavericks. Maxi had 15 points with 8 rebounds. He hit 2 triples. He had 2 assists. He had 2 steals. He had 5 blocks. He was 6 of 9 from the field, and he hit his only free throw. Just an absolute monster of a performance from Maxi. He has been really impressive this season. That is the second time this year he has had a game with 5 blocks. Now, he is a guy that I talked about a little bit at the start of the season, saying some of his translations, his defensive translation numbers from Europe looked pretty good. And I've got him in, I think, 2 or 3 of the 5 Red Rock 30-team dynasty leagues. He is on my team there because he was just sitting on waivers at the start of the season. So, you know what? I'm just going to grab this guy and see how it goes. I like how everything looks for him in terms of his translations and his numbers in Europe. And it's worked out better than even I could have expected. Now, prior to this, his minutes had waned a little bit. The 3 games prior to this, 19, 8, and 20 minutes. But then the 5 games prior to that, he'd gone 34, 30, 29, 34, and 30. So he's been a little bit up and down with his playing time. He's definitely not someone that you can rely upon consistently, but over the last month, he's a top 120 player. He's a top 100 guy over the last 2 weeks. And mainly it's coming from the fact that in those 2 weeks, he's getting 1.6 blocks per game, he's shooting 56% from the field, and he hasn't missed a free throw. Now, it's on minimal attempts, but still, getting a high field goal percentage, high free throw percentage, really good shot blocking sort of a guy in that time frame can be really useful. Now, I'm not saying that he's a must-own guy. I'm not even saying he's a guy that should be owned. But if he was on your 12-team roster, it's not a horrendous issue. It's actually pretty fine, depending on what you need. If you need those specific numbers to fill out a specific deficit on your team in a weekly matchup, Maxi's fine. Now, I do worry a little bit about his playing time when Seth Curry returns, whenever the hell that is, because I think that will force Wes Matthews to the 3, it'll push the pencil Harrison Barnes to the 4, even if that's not the starting lineup. We'll see more of that lineup throughout the season, especially given the way that other guys like JJ Barea, Devin Harris, Yogi Ferrell are playing as well, so we'll push to a more smaller lineups, and maybe that forces some of Kleber's minutes to be reduced. But with what he's doing at the moment, his numbers are obviously really, really impressive, and it's worthy of a look. I wouldn't say that the upside for him is extremely high or anything like that, but they're looking pretty solid at this point, and that's all you can really ask for a guy like Kleber, an undrafted rookie who has come across here and assumed a starting role and looks really solid in that for Dallas. I was going to go straight onto the dud of the night, but let's have a word from today's sponsor before we get onto the dud of the night. And today's sponsor, of course, is the great people over at Draft. Did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why Draft is my new favorite fantasy site. No more getting crushed by the pros. And it's not just me. More than 1 million people that have already downloaded Draft 2. Remember, Draft is a DFS app that doesn't include salary cap. It is a snake draft DFS site. Play in a real-life NBA draft right now. Be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use my promo code LOFANTASY. That's right, play in a real money draft for free just by using my promo code LOFANTASY. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure you'll love it that they're even offering Locked On Fantasy Basketball listeners a money-back guarantee of up to $100. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play for free right now with that promo code LOFANTASY. And make sure you are joining in on Draft Wednesday across the Locked On Podcast Network, where all other listeners to Locked On Podcasts and the hosts are joining in specific Locked On leagues, which you can only get access to by using that promo code LOFANTASY. So make sure you are doing that to get involved with the other hosts and listeners across the Locked On Podcast Network. Let's go now to the dud of the night. And it is a teammate of Maxi Kleber, and it is Dennis Smith of the Dallas Mavericks. 8-5-4 for Smith, which is not horrendous, but it's where the percentages really came in that hurt you. 3-14 from the field, 2-4 from the free throw line. Smith has been fairly poor over his last 9 games, ranked 267th in that time frame, averaging 12, 3.5, and 4 on 39% and 67%. So you get the double whack on the percentages, the field goal percentage and the free throw percentage. I don't think that he is a guy that necessarily should be dropped. But when you look at his numbers, 188 for the season, I can understand some trepidation in holding on to him. I do think he's going to have a bigger second half to the season, but much like Kleber, the return of Curry along with Barea and Harris and Ferrell and all these guys who are playing well in that backcourt might make his ability to get to 30, 31, 32 minutes tough. But we often see in these tanking teams or these poorer teams, once we get to March, the rookies get more minutes, they get more confident, and their game explodes. And that's what the feeling I get with February, March for Dennis Smith, that he could definitely put in a top 70 type performance in that time frame. He's still a guy that I believe in. He's still starting. The minutes are a little bit worrisome at the moment, but I'm not overly concerned. In the leagues that I do have him, which is not a huge amount, but I've got him more in Dynasty than in Redraft leagues. But in those leagues that I do have him, I am still holding, and I'm just riding it out and seeing what happens at this point. Maybe that's to my detriment, but he hasn't been good as of late. Now, one of the segments that I did want to introduce to this podcast, and I used to do it quite a bit before, but it's sort of gotten away from it now, is question time. So I'm not going to answer everyone's question, but once a day, I'll pick one question from you guys who send it through to me on Twitter, at redrock_beeball, and I will answer that question. It doesn't have to be fantasy related. It doesn't even have to be NBA related. In fact, if it's just a specific question about your team, I'm probably less likely to answer it, because that's, you know, of more use to you as an individual rather than everyone. So every day I'll put out a call for questions for the pod, reply with your question. Again, whatever it is, basketball related, anything, movie related, personal related, food related, anything you want to throw at me, throw it at me, and I'll pick one question per day. So now it is time for question time. And today's question comes from Graham Chappell, and you can find him on Twitter at Graham_Chappell. And his question is, can you educate everyone on why timeouts are bullshit? And I suppose it's not exactly a question, but it does lead me into, and I talk about this all the time, and I know for a lot of you Americans and North American people in general that the concept of timeouts is ingrained in what you do with sports. Graham is based in the UK. So with their sports, with our sports, it's no timeouts. You just play. And the time, and having just so many timeouts so coaches can come in and draw up plays and stop clocks, it is just an absolute buzzkill to the flow of the game. It's a buzzkill to the enjoyment of the game. Now, over there, coaches are put on pedestals. You hear the talk about, you know, Bill Belichick and, you know, Vince Lombardi, you know, Greg Popovich in America. You have this great fascination with coaches because they have to control everything, the college stuff. Yeah, all those great legendary college coaches. They're controlling every little thing. In the sport that I grew up with, and same with Graham, yeah, that's not what happens. The players take ownership of decisions, and it comes down to decisions that they make that's instilled with them through training and practice and their learning abilities, rather than the coach coming out and saying, oh, there's 2 seconds left, you do this, you do this, you do this. I don't know anybody who goes, oh, great, another timeout. But it's just so ingrained in this sport and in all American sport, especially American sport. Hockey, not so much. You don't really have timeouts. You know, line changes happen on the fly. There's still stoppages in play, but there's no real timeouts. When we play here, we play in Australian football, 30-minute quarters, no timeouts. No, only stop is for a goal when they take it back and we start again in 30 seconds. Or there's when there's a free kick, but even then it's like a 5-6 second delay. That's it. There's no stoppage in any of this stuff, and there still be your stoppages from fouls, which is another thing that I could get into. But timeouts ruin the flow of the game. when there's a last-second situation, I love it when a coach doesn't call a timeout and lets the players just freelance, and not freelance, will do what they want to do, because it puts more pressure on the defense rather than the other team enabling to get their best defensive players in there, set up in the correct positions, really get their mind settled and focused. If you just play on, the likelihood of something going awry, game winners happening, to me, is more likely than you can say, yeah, but then you can't advance the ball to half court, which is a bullshit rule in itself. It's a ridiculous rule that you can advance the ball anyway. But in preseason, I know they've cut down the amount of timeouts and the amount of timeouts under 2 minutes. I want to run a game, no timeouts, none whatsoever, and see what happens. The game will be over quicker. I think it'll flow better. It'd be very interesting to see that sort of thing. It's just not something that's ingrained in what we do. We don't have stoppages in our play, in sports that we play over here, and the same with Graham, who would have grown up watching soccer. There's just no timeouts. It's just you go for 45 minutes, a half, and that's it. You just go, and everything is worked out. And the coach is literally right there on the court. And if he wants to tell him something, he can tell him. That he is. I can hear Tom Thibodeau from all the way in Australia. I'm sure the blokes on the court can hear him telling him what to do. We don't need timeouts and clipboards and pens, you know, every 5 seconds at the end of a game. It's annoying. It takes the enjoyment, to me, a lot of the enjoyment out of those end game situations, because you're sitting there, I don't know, maybe it builds tension. I just think it's bullshit, and I wish they'd eliminate them. And I know they're not going to, but that's my rant. And Graham, I know, agrees with me. And I think a lot of it is a background thing of where we grew up and what we grew up watching. And I'm sure that majority of people in Australia or in the UK or in Europe will have that similar sort of mindset, whereas people in America are just so used to timeouts that they just go, well, that's just what it is. So that is today's question. As I said, it can be about anything, and we're going to try and introduce that as a daily thing. I've got another segment coming up later on, which I'll talk about. That'll be after the break as we head into the DFS stuff. It's not going to be DFS related, but that's when I'm going to do that new topic. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the 8 games from Tuesday, get into those, break down all the action from all those games now, and then we'll be back to talk the new segment and talk about DFS later on in the show. So let's get into these games. Now, the first one we want to take a look at is the first game of the night in the Indiana Pacers and Detroit Pistons. Just an absolute pantsing from the Pistons. Vic Oladipo had 13 points. He also had a Richie Beno.
2 for 2, 2, 2.
And that's pretty much all the good things that I can say about this game. I wouldn't be reading really anything at all into this performance or into the playing time of these guys. Lance Stephenson led the team in minutes with 32 minutes, and Nate McMillan did say after the game that he's thinking of maybe shuffling the lineup to try and spark something. I don't know if that's just an empty threat or not. The change that I think they would make would be putting Corey Joseph in ahead of Darren Collison. I'm not sure that's going to be the case, but it is something to watch out for. But in terms of low minutes to Turner and Collison and Oladipo and Boyan and Thad Young, it was just an absolute ass-kicking from the very get-go, so I wouldn't be too bogged down in reading too much into this. For the Pistons, they did make a change to their starting lineup. Tone Tolliver had started the last two games. In a matchup-based decision, he went back to the bench, and they started Luke Kennard. He only played 12 minutes. Stan Johnson got a ton of minutes, and that's mainly so he could match up with Lance Stephenson. That's something the Pistons do like to do, is put Stan onto Lance. So he played 36 minutes, only had 6 and 7, and had 1 of 8 from the field. So no indication that he's an add. Well, Reggie Bullock played 29 and had 11, 2 and 2. Not really a standard league add, I don't think. Bullock, more of a 14-team league guy. The bigger news, I guess, from this game is Reggie Jackson spraining his ankle. He looked really good before that. 8 points, 3 rebounds, 13 assists in basically a half and a little bit. It didn't look great. It didn't look great, but x-rays were negative. That doesn't necessarily mean anything. It means there's no break. Well, so that's what it means. He's going to have an MRI, and we've seen plenty of ankle sprains go awry. John Isaac missed about a month. John Lua had an ankle sprain, still not back. Who knows when he's coming back? There's others that I can't even remember off the top of my head of guys that have missed multiple weeks, 4 or 5 weeks with an ankle sprain. And I would say that Reggie is more likely to be closer to that. Evan Fournier just missed, 2-3 weeks with one. More closer to 4 or 5 weeks than he is to not missing a game. That's a pain in the ass. I went and added Ish Smith in places that I could. It might be only a game. I'll be stunned if Jackson misses no time. It might only be a game, but Ish is the guy to grab. He had 12, 2, and 3 here. His percentages can be a problem, field goal percentage and free throw percentage, but he's going to score a bit, he's going to get some assists, and he's going to get some steals. So that is, I guess, the big news there. Drummond was great, 21 and 18. Well, Toby Harris, red hot, 10 of 11 for 30 points, 7 triples and 6 rebounds. He was on track for just an absolute monster, but cooled down after the first quarter because they didn't need him to really do too much more because this game was over pretty quickly. The next game, we take a look at the Toronto Raptors and the Dallas Mavericks. Kyle Lowry always does well against Dallas, and he did it again. 23, 8, and 6 with 4 triples. Didn't shoot the ball well, but that's a nice performance. Well, DeLon Wright only played 16 minutes, but brought it defensively. 1 steal and 2 blocks with 7 points. He's more of a Maxi Kleber-type standard league streamer at this point, but those defensive numbers, along with the usual assists that he gets, does make him an interesting guy. Jonas Valanciunas, I'm sure you'll all be shocked that he actually put up numbers when he got minutes. 17 and 11 in 25 minutes for Valanciunas, but we just cannot rely on that sort of playing time. Now, Bebe Noguera was healthy and he was active and they chose not to play him. So that is an interesting development, giving Jakob Poeltl 18 minutes. They still ran everyone else out there for a shit ton of minutes, but no Bebe impacting on Valanciunas or Poeltl. Valanciunas is a real borderline hold at this point. If he gets 25 a night, then he's a guy you own. If he gets 21 a night, then it is really tough to consider him a guy as a must-own player. With DeLon coming back, it's really impacting CJ Miles, the Jedi OG Anunoby, and Norm Powell, and it's going to be tough for any of them to get really enough minutes to be relevant in standard leagues. Onto the Mavs, Dirk was great, 18 and 7 with 3 blocks and a 3. He's been really, really strong lately, Dirk, and he is fine in a 12-team league. His upside is obviously not that high, but he's fine to own. While the Pencil had a double-double, 16 and 10 for Harrison Barnes. While JJ Barea was just awesome down the stretch. Dirk sat out in crunch time, Barea got it done, got the victory, 20 points for him, 4 assists. I think he's almost a must-own at this point. He is just putting up numbers every single game that he plays, and it is really impressive. Yogi Ferrell has been really up and down with his numbers. Only 20 minutes here for 0 points for Yogi, really just a deeper league sort of a guy, and that's really about it for him. Let's move on to the next game, the Orlando Magic and the Miami Heat. We had a surprise return of Evan Fournier. He was originally ruled out, and then he was upgraded to doubtful, and then he was in, and he was starting, and he played 30 minutes. 14 points, 3 rebounds, 1 assist, so almost back to his full allotment of minutes. So that's great to see if you are a Fournier owner. Another strong game from Lord Alfred Payton, 19, 8, and 6 on 50% shooting. His free throws are still a worry, but he is putting up numbers much more than he was before. Still no As Gordon, so Mario Hezonja started once more, 14 and 5 in 32 minutes. But with John Isaac back, with Gordon likely back in the next game, it's going to be hard to see Hezonja keeping up enough value to continue to be a, you know, borderline 12-team short-term guy. I had him in a 12-team league. I dropped him today to go and add Ish Smith. With Nick Vucevic out, Bismack Biyombo started. He played 30 minutes, 3 points, because he's just an absolutely atrocious offensive player, but 12 boards and 5 blocks, and usually he will have a better field goal percentage of this than this, 1 of 7. So he is a guy that you probably should be owning in 12-team leagues, but beware his free throw percentage. He does go to the line a decent amount, and he shoots it horribly there, and don't expect big offensive numbers. It was Mo Spates' turn to have some offensive performance here, 12 and 6 in 17 minutes, and he could be a deeper league sort of a guy. While John Isaac returned, he had 1 and 1 with 2 steals. I think it's interesting that Frank Vogel keeps saying, oh, he's on a minutes restriction, he's going to limit him to 20. To me, that implies that he's going to play more than that at some point this season. So that is an interesting thing to pay attention to, but he's not really a 12-team league guy at the moment. Well, John Simmons, I do worry about his value. He had 4 and 4 in 32 minutes, 1 of 8 shooting, and this is something I've talked about with him all the time. He was on high usage, high efficiency, and when Fournier returned, and then eventually when Vucevic comes back, he's not going to be able to get that similar level of usage that he had before. Now, we know that Vuce is out for another couple of months, so that shouldn't be too much of an issue for Simo there, but just be wary of him. He's not as much of a slam dunk as what he may seem on the surface. For the Miami Heat, no James Johnson, no Deion Waiters, no Justice Winslow, but Hassan Whiteside returned, and he played 18 minutes, 7 and 8 for Whiteside, and yes, he's coming back from this knee injury. I get the feeling, and this is just a gut feeling, I think with the play of Bam Adebayo, with the play of Kelly Olynyk, I don't think we're getting 34 minutes a night from Hassan Whiteside moving forward. In fact, while I don't think it will happen, but if he was, you know, limited to 26, 27 a night per game moving forward from here, I wouldn't be stunned. I just think that he's limited in what he can do. These other guys have proven effective, and especially when Johnson comes back, another option at center there. And that is a real concern to me with Whiteside and how this moves forward for him. But I wouldn't be reading into the 18 minutes and going, well, he's only going to play 18 minutes. But just the other things with those guys is a bit of a concern. Kelly Olynyk was great, 15 and 12, 3 steals and 2 blocks in 32 minutes. I think his minutes are going to come down, especially when Jim Johnson returns. But for now, he's a guy to own. While Bam had 8 and 9, 4 assists, a steal and 2 blocks. He is putting up numbers, much like most Kentucky guys that come out, that really belie what he did when he was in college. Not a must-own 12-team league guy. But I'll tell you who is, Joshy Richardson. 20 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists. And I put this out there on Twitter today, because I was thinking about it. Is Josh Richardson the Heat's best player? Whiteside has struggled. Goran Dragic is definitely not himself. Deion Waiters is he's not that good. Kelly Olynyk's okay. James Johnson is pretty solid. Look, who is the Heat's best player? At the start of the season, you go, it's a no-brainer. It's the iron shoulder. There's no doubt about that. But that's not the case now. Now, Dragic probably still is the best player, but Richardson is an elite perimeter defender, and his offensive game is back on track. 20 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, and 1 steal here. He gets minutes every game. Eric Spoelstra treats him like the best player in terms of the consistency of his minutes. It's interesting just to have a think about it when you try and you stack it up with how everyone's playing at the moment. Not historical. Whiteside had been really good in the past. Dragic had been really good in the past. But as of the moment, is the best player Joshy Richardson? I don't know. The Duke had 18 points, and unsurprisingly, all of those came from deep. He hit 6 triples. He is the best 3-point streamer that is out there. And with Deion Waiters' sideline, which could be a while because Waiters said he definitely needs surgery, but won't have it until after the season. So he's going to be out for a little bit of time here. The Duke has some value, especially if you are looking for some scoring and threes. Tyler Johnson's also going to get extra run. 37 minutes for TJ, 17, 4, and 2 with a triple one. And he is a guy to own given the state of Deion Waiters' ankle. The Chicago Bulls and the Milwaukee Bucks. Chrissy Dunn was ejected late in the game after a tussle with Chrissy Middleton. Just really fighting over who's got the coolest Chris starting with a K name. I probably go with Middleton. Just that extra H just throws everyone off. Dunny had 20 points, 12 assists, 4 steals, 2 blocks. And you know what? He was atrocious last season. He didn't start off the season that well, but I think the one thing I talked about a lot with him in the preseason, he's going to get an opportunity. He's going to be a great late round pick to get some assists, to get your steals, but really got to watch the percentages because he was atrocious. But to his credit, his shooting has been much, much better than I anticipated. He's increased his efficiency a lot. Missed all 3 of his threes today, but 53% from the field. He still has the worries there, still has some turnover concerns, but he has been much, much better than I anticipated he was going to be. And I was pretty high on him heading into the draft, saying he's a guy you do really have to look at as one of those great. Him and Tyreek Evans were two of the guys that said, look, with your last pick, these are the guys you want to look at picking. Nick Mirotic, 28 minutes for him, 24 and 8 for the Montenegrin Alpha, 4 triples, another strong game from Mirotic. The minutes are going to fluctuate 24 to 28, depending on what's happening with Punch Bob and with Lauri Markkanen. But Mirotic with another strong game, and he should be owned. While the Hammer, Denzel Valentine, had 13, 4, and 2 in 28 minutes. He's in a little run of some strong play as well. He's more of a streamer than a must-own. As for Markkanen, it was ugly. 20 minutes, 1 of 7 with 3 points and 7 rebounds. I think some of the hyperbole with Markkanen to begin the season was just that. It was hyperbolic. He's not as good as what was made out to begin the season. He does have his limitations fantasy-wise with his defensive numbers. And the shot has, after that really hot first 3 weeks or so, it's fallen off quite a bit. Now, I'm not saying he's a guy to drop. He's a guy that should be owned at this point. But how long is that going to last for? I still believe that he will remain the starter, but I don't think he'll play 32 or not. It'll be down to 28 or 29. But just one game ago, he played 29 minutes. So the 20 minutes doesn't really concern me too much. But if his production continues to fall, that is going to be a concern. Punch Bob had 9 and 8 in 24 minutes, but he is just a deeper league guy. While Nwaba had 7 and 9 in his 25 minutes. And again, he is also a deeper league guy. On to the Milwaukee Bucks. Jason Kidd, he's got to go. It's as simple as that. He is a horrendous, horrendous coach. Nothing he says makes sense. Like, just comments after the game, giving excuses for the team. Oh, we're too young. The expectations are too high. Like, who says that to a team? Guys, you're not as good as what everyone thinks. And honestly, we shouldn't have high expectations. Like, what kind of bullshit coaching is that? Set your sights low. And then after the game, Giannis came out and says, they go, what are your expectations? He goes, I expect us to be better. I expect us to make the playoffs and go further. So when Giannis doesn't like Kidd, and this is based on nothing, it's based on observation, he doesn't like Kidd. And fair enough, because kid's a dick. He's got no idea what he's doing. He's a shit bloke. He's a shit coach. And it's going to cause problems. The problem is that he is in cahoots with ownership, came across there with some power play bullshit front office maneuver, the Jeff Schwartz bullshit that enabled him to get over from the Nets. It's very intricate, and it's just going to ruin this team. Kidd is a terrible coach. That quote was horrendous. And then the other one, someone asked, backing up that question, why didn't Sean Kilpatrick play today? Was it an injury? And Kidd's response, I shit you not, to paraphrase, his name didn't get pulled out of the lottery today. And while, you know, if another coach said that, you might laugh. But with Kidd, you literally think that's what happens, that he has a hat and he puts it in there and he pulls a name out. Because none of it makes sense. Jason Vets playing December Terry has been back from injury. He doesn't play anymore. Sterling Brown was playing. He was out. DeAndre Liggins apparently is the guy that when Eric Bledsoe gets into foul trouble, Liggins is the guy you put in there as the point guard. Well, what kind of bullshit maneuver is this? Now, I know that a minute later, Brogdon came in. But when Bledsoe gets foul trouble, you know who replaces him? Your rookie of the year backup point guard. Not a offensively challenged, overrated defense wing player. The decisions that this guy makes are just horrendous on a daily basis. Now, Brogdon was strong here, and I like that he's getting back to 30 minutes. 30 minutes for Brogo, 18-6-2 with two blocks. He should still be owned. Bledsoe had 22-5-6, and Yanni had 28-7-4 in a triple one, playing 37 minutes, one game after missing due to knee soreness. The Muppet had 7-6. John Henson, he had three blocks. I think he's a 12-team league player. Well, I'll tell you who isn't. Tone Snell. The next game, the Brooklyn Nets and the San Antonio Spurs. Caris LeVert, 15 points, 5 assists, and 2 steals. He just looks really, really strong. Now, at some point when D'Angelo Russell returns, someone's going to lose out. Spencer Dinwiddie, Alan Crabb, or Caris LeVert. Who's it going to be? If it was me, it'd be Crabb that's losing out because I think he's the worst player out of that group, even though he played pretty well here, 15-5 with 4 triples. But LeVert playing very, very impressively at the moment, and he should be owned in 12s, as of course should Spencer. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson left the game, went to the locker room with a hip injury, but came back 13-6-3 in 27 minutes, and his breakout continues. Well, this is a really interesting thing about Jarrett Allen. 21 minutes, 12-9 for Allen. That is great. Now, you know I'm a big fan of what Allen can do longer term. The trade of Jahlil Okafor dampened that somewhat, but with the way that Allen plays, I think he's a better player for today's NBA than Okafor, and he might even be a better player at the moment. He's not really stashable, just given the uncertainty with Okafor at this point, but it is something to definitely watch. There's also 20 minutes of Quincy Acey here that can also go towards Jahlil Okafor. And to give it away a little bit, the new segment I'm going to introduce later on in the show, I'm going to talk about a player a day. And that I'm definitely going to ask you guys for your nominations of who that player is, just for my thoughts on that particular player regarding whatever. And today's one is going to be my thoughts on Jahlil Okafor, and I'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show before we head into DFS. Damari Carroll had been playing well, but not today. 1 of 10 for 2 points in 27 minutes for him. On to the Spurs, Kawhi Leonard. The minutes limit starting to get pushed through. 26 minutes here, 21-2-2 with 2 triples. Now, you can read things in many different places. You can go onto Fantasy Basketball subreddit. You can go onto forums. You can read stuff on Twitter. And lots of people are willing to give their opinions on things. And a lot of those times, those things are wrong. People ask the question, when's Kawhi going to be on a minutes limit? And someone replied to that on Reddit today. Now, I'm not calling it. I don't know if this person listens to this podcast, but he says, the minutes limits will continue until mid-February. What? No. They won't. He's not going to be on a minutes limit for 2 months. People are convinced that for the entirety of the season, Kawhi is not going to play any back-to-backs, and he's going to be on a minutes limit. I don't think that's going to be the case at all. We saw him get 26 minutes here. He scored 21 points. He looked like Kawhi. Everything was back in business. So just be really careful of things, and you can read it everywhere, and it tends to snowball and roll. Like, Marc Gasol's going to be rested down the stretch. He's not going to play after February. He's definitely going to get traded. Look, these things are all just speculation from people that are not based necessarily in reality. So just really be careful reading that sort of stuff and burning that into your mind. I think within a week and a half to 2 weeks, Kawhi's going to be playing 35 a night, or 33 a night at least. I don't think there's going to be too much I've been concerned, and we're definitely not waiting until the All-Star break for him to be getting his minutes back. If that happens, I'll happily admit that I'm wrong. Pretty sure it won't. Kyle Anderson ahead of Rudy Gay, 18 minutes, 5-5 with 2 steals, while Gay, he only played 16 minutes. Of course, 68% of people are still owning Rudy Gay. Surely those 68% of leagues are inactive. There's absolutely no excuse to be owning Rudy Gay in a 12-team league. Tone Parker, 25 minutes, 14 and 4. He's a streamer for standard leagues. He's a 14 to 16 team league guy. While LaMarcus Aldridge, 20 and 9, 2 steals and a block. But he did see his usage drop down, only 26% here. But it's still a very nice performance, just not as good as what it was when Kawhi was out. Interestingly, Pau Gasol putting up big numbers, 15, 12 and 5. But his minutes have been through the roof recently. I'm not sure that's going to stick. 15, 12 and 5 in those 29 minutes. Of course, he has to be owned, but I'd expect some level of drop-off from him. Dan Green also returned, had a steal and a block, but only played the 23 minutes. He is a borderline 12-team league guy now, especially with Kawhi back. The Memphis Grizzlies and the Phoenix Suns, I talked about Marc Gasol. Did I talk about him? Yeah, I'm pretty sure I talked about him earlier on. No, I didn't actually. I wrote about him. That was what it was. He seems pissed at this team. I don't exactly know what this is going to mean for him moving forward, but he doesn't seem great. Now, the Grizzlies have said they won't trade him, but he might make it impossible for them not to trade him. So it is something to, I guess, have in your mind, but I wouldn't be making any moves based on it. Now, he didn't shoot well here. 4 of 16, 18 and 6 with 4 blocks is still a nice number, and played 38 minutes. So, again, a lot of panic moves get made. I think he's going to be rested. He's going to get traded, and you sell him off for Robin Lopez. Oh, I've got to get something back. I'm more of a, hey, let's just ride it out in that sort of a situation. Tyreek had 25, 5, and 5 with a steal and a block and two triples. Well, there was no Chandler Parsons. There was no Jermichael Green. So Brandon Wright started. He played only 19 minutes and had a block and a steal. With Parsons back in the next game, I don't think there's really much to see with Brandon Wright. If you're in a deep league, though, you've got to be looking at Kobe Simmons. He had 26 minutes, 6 and 5 with two steals and a block. Now, he's a two-way guy, and when Mike Conley comes back, there just might not be enough minutes for him to go around to continue to have value, but they want to see what they've got in here. Mario Chalmers and Ben McLemore out of the rotation completely now, and I don't imagine especially Chalmers getting back in. In fact, I could very easily see Chalmers getting waived and Simmons holding onto that roster spot getting converted, depending on how he goes, and it's been an impressive start. So if you're in a deeper league, Simmons is a guy to pay a level of attention to. Onto the Suns, just a great victory for the Suns. I know, you know, a lot of the Tank fans won't be really happy with getting that win, but what a great pass from Dragan Bender across to Tyson Chandler for the alley-oop victory. Just a stunning, stunning victory. Now, Chandler only played 18 minutes, had 7 and 6 because Alex Len was big again. 12 and 6 in 30 minutes, 4 assists and 2 blocks for Len. The problem is, like with all of this bullshit on the Suns, is that we just don't know what's going to happen. Like, he played like 28 minutes, and then 18, 17, and it never makes any sense. He is the one that you should be looking at owning in 12-team leagues. Greg Monroe's done. You can move on from him. Marquise Chris, a solid performance. The most impressive thing is he stayed on the court for 29 minutes and didn't foul out. Had 4 fouls, but stayed on there. 13 points, 2 steals and a block. I'm not saying he's a guy to go and grab, but this has been a much more impressive performance from Chris over the last week, and it's something to pay some attention to. Anyone who grabbed Isaiah Cannon in 12-10 leagues, I reckon you can move on from that. 4-1 and 4 in 21 minutes because Devin Booker was back. He played 34 minutes and he had 32, 5 and 6. So we're back to seeing a fair bit of point Booker, and that's going to really limit what Cannon can do. Tyler Ulis also played 27 minutes, started off well next to Booker, had 8 points with 2 triples and 6 assists. So again, I think that Cannon should be restricted to a deeper league sort of guy. With Booker back, Joshie Jackson played just the 13 minutes while TJ Warren had 17 points and nothing else. No threes, no rebounds, no assists, no steals, and no blocks. And that's genuinely impressive to be able to score and do literally nothing else. I don't think that will happen all that often. The Utah Jazz and the Denver Nuggets, Don Mitchell. The Don had 13, 3, and 6 in a really piss-poor performance overall from the Jazz. They got smacked. Jonas Jerebko made another start and had 13 and 3. Well, Ricky Rubio had 32 minutes, 2 points, but 6 boards, 7 assists, and 2 steals. Just doing enough to make you continue to hold on to him. Derek Favors had 20 and 6. One of the more interesting things in this one is the fact that Thabo Sefolosha was a DNP CD again, and with so many wings around, and with Royce O'Neal playing really well, Thabo is just going to find it hard to get enough minutes on a nightly basis, especially not 20+. So if you're owning Thabo in a deeper league, you have to really assess whether he is a guy to hold on to. O'Neal also played over Alec Burks in the second half. 12 minutes for Burks, 2 and 3. This is what I was talking about with Burks when he was going through that hot streak, that when Hood returned and when Rubio returned, when he was out, and when, you know, when everything was going to get back to normal, that there just wasn't going to be anywhere near enough minutes for Burks. As what seems like a daily occurrence for me now, I got into arguments with people on Twitter about this. No, Alec Burks is good. He's their best player. No, he's not. No, he's not even close to that. And even if you think that, it doesn't matter, because if the coaching staff doesn't think that, then it means nothing. And that's where we're currently at with Burks. So obviously, he's not a 12-team league guy. Rocket Rodney Hood shot poorly for 10-6, but I would still be considering him a 12-team guy. On to the Nuggets. They are persisting with this starting lineup of Nikola Jokic and Mason Plumlee, and it's actually working not too bad. Plumlee's only playing 20 to 25 minutes. He played 20 here and had 9 and 8, while Jokic was ejected for a flagrant 2, which I don't think is going to result in a suspension. He had 13, 7, and 5. Plumlee is more of a stream 12-team league guy. Manny Moutier was also back, but Dr. Michael Malone said before the game that he liked the way his rotation was going with the Blue Arrow as his starting point guard and Fartin Will Barton with his backup. Now, he didn't use those exact words. He called them by their proper names. But that's left Moutier on the outside looking in. Now, he came in and scored 7 points in a minute 30, which is obviously a good return, but those a minute 30 were the absolute junk time of the game. So Moutier's value is really hitting a low. And I'll tell you who also is shit at the moment? Barton. 36 minutes, 5.6 rebounds and 5 assists. As soon as I said, you know what, maybe I'm wrong on this guy, maybe he's good, he turned back to the guy that I'd known for the last 3 to 4 years, a guy that's just not that good. And we're seeing that now. He has been brutally bad in December. I think you still have to keep holding him, but honestly, to me, he's just not that good. He goes through these hot streaks of shooting, and then he just has abysmally poor runs. I can't remember if it was last season or the season before that he had, in a 3-game span, 2 games of like 0 of 10 from the field. And then the other one, he was like 5 of 8 or something. Just inexplicably weird variations in his shooting. Not inexplicably. He's not that good. But you still have to hold him for the moment. Gaz Harris was strong. Nice, Gary! Someone asked me today if they should drop Gaz Harris. Just realize how good this guy is. 15, 2, and 5 in 36 minutes. His minutes aren't going anywhere. He is very good, as is the Blue Arrow. 22 and 8 with 3 triples and a steal. The only thing holding back the Blue Arrow is the Malone handbrake. Playing him 28 minutes a night is what's going to limit him, not really anything else. Baby Neck had 15 and 7. I think he's okay for 12s, Wilson Chandler. He's not a must-own. He's a low upside guy, but he's playing fairly well at the moment. The last game of the night, just embarrassment really from the Sacramento Kings. They were humbled by the LA Clippers, 122 to 95. Cauley Stein played only 25 minutes. I believe didn't play a single second in the second quarter, and that's just unforgivable for whatever bullshit this is that Jaeger's running out there. Cauley Stein was still good, 17 and 7, 3 assists, 4 steals, 80% shooting, and he is a must-own player. Unfortunately, really it's hard to justify anyone else's being that. Budrick Hield started again. He had a big game in the last start, but of course he played only 18 minutes in this one, because why wouldn't you just want to give some level of consistency to your players? Bogdan Bogdanovic played 29 off the bench and had 9, 3, and 3. It's hard to own Hield. It's hard to own Bogdan. Even Zach Randolph had 9 and 5 in 21 minutes because his shooting was poor, and I have no issue with his minutes being reduced because he's been putting up good numbers, but there's just no reason for him to get big minutes and big touches. Still at a usage of 30%, which is just unfathomable on this sort of team. But the coaching here is really, really piss poor. Garrett Temple, just 22 minutes. He'd been playing 30 a night. There's no value in him. While Georgie Hill had 7, 2, and 5. Now, he'd been playing some big minutes lately. I think that if it had been closer, he would have played his 30. And he's the guy behind Cauley Stein that I would own in 12-10 leagues. But just a complete shit show. For the Clippers, the news is that Blake Griffin might actually be back for the Clippers' next game against the Lakers on Friday, so pay attention to that. Wes Johnson could also be back there, so a lot of this rotational stuff will change. Jamil Wilson went off and hit 5 triples in the first quarter, ended with 5 triples, but had 17 points, 2 steals, and 2 blocks, but he has got 5 days left on his 45 days of his two-way. So two things can happen. They can waive someone to create a full roster spot for him, or they can cut him. With the way that the two-way contracts have been going, well, actually, they don't have to keep him. They can just send him back to the G League. But we've seen this plenty of times throughout the season, and I think it's an unintended consequence of the two-way deal, is that when their 45 days are up, they cut them, and they sign someone else whose 45-day contract then starts again, and they can use them on their 17-man roster. That is a massive, massive loophole in that situation. So basically, they're signing people, instead of to 2 10-day contracts, they sign them to 45-day contracts, and that's it. Bring them up, play them the 45 days in the NBA. Oh, your 45 days are up, cut, sign someone else. We've got them for 45 days. It's definitely an unintended consequence of that rule, and I think it's going to result in Wilson getting cut. Big game from Sindarius Thornwell. I like Thornwell long-term, but he'd been out of the rotation prior to this game. 8-5-4 with 4 steals. So I'm not sure what to really make of that. Jawan Evans played 27 minutes. Milos, only 21 minutes for Teodosic. It was a smashing, so he didn't need to play too much more. They said he was on a minutes restriction, which, weirdly enough, he played 32 in the last game, so I'm not really sure what that restriction's about. 8, 4, and 10 for Milos here. I think that he is a must-own. Those assist numbers were great. The shots still aren't falling, but he hit two triples, and I think that he should be owned. Lou Williams was strong with 21 points, while the table Montrezl Harrell had 22 and 8 in his 22 minutes. That does it for all the action for Tuesday. I'm going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to come back and I'm going to debut this new segment. I don't have a snappy name for it. I'm just going to call it Player of the Day at this point, and then we're going to talk DFS for Wednesday's 10-game slate. I've got a song from the Hot Potato Band, and it's called This Is How It Should Be, and then I'll be back to go through the Player of the Day and talk some DFS. We're back, and I'm trying to debut a new segment on the show, and it's just going to be talking about a player. I called it Player of the Day, but it's not the best player of the day. It's just a player that I want to talk about. And again, I'm going to take suggestions from you guys of who you want to hear me talk about. But today, the player I'm going to discuss is Jahlil Okafor of the Brooklyn Nets. And I've got a couple of things to talk about with Okafor. I'm not going to get too much into his value as a fantasy player, because you've heard me talk about that all the time. I think he needs 30-plus minutes to be a top 100 player, and I don't think he's going to get that. I know his defense is terrible. He doesn't have shooting range. He struggles in a lot of aspects of the NBA. But what I want to talk about here is a few things that just don't jive very well with me. So he came across to the Brooklyn Nets, didn't play the first couple of games. Then on that second half of a back-to-back, he made his debut and played 22 minutes. And we haven't seen him since. The excuse after that is he needs to work on his conditioning. So A, how could he come in and play 22 minutes in that first game? If his conditioning was such a problem, he wouldn't have been able to get through the 22 minutes, I'm guessing. So, you know, he's going to be 2 weeks to get his conditioning up. There's something that doesn't sit right here with me from a Nets point of view, but also mainly from an Okafor point of view. And I'll tell you all this stuff that doesn't... It's weird to me. Jahlil didn't play for the Sixers. He played two games, like 12 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever he played. So what was he doing? All off-season... all preseason, apparently he was healthy on his vegan diet, knee was fine. What was he doing? Why does he have no conditioning now? Was he just literally doing nothing? Being a shit bloke. Now, people put all this blame on the Sixers, hashtag free jar, the Sixers killed him, had a dog organization, that's terrible, how could they do this to the kid? There's more to it. If he can't play because of conditioning, when that's all he was really should have been doing in that time, wasn't injured. Yeah, what was he doing? Was he just not doing any of the work required? Was he not putting in any work to be a professional at his job? Was he not doing any like conditioning work on his own, getting on the treadmill, getting on the gym, running up and down, you know, participating? Was he just not doing any of it? If so, well, if he wasn't doing that, then that's on him. And that's where the concerns come about this guy as a player. That do the right thing. Do what you need to do. When you finally get traded, you can go to the team and they go, man, why are you such a fat prick and you can't do anything? Why can't you run? Why can't you move? And now they're putting him through some, you know, a 2-week conditioning program to get him right to play. And you can say, and I know the common retort to this is going to be, oh, the Sixers didn't play him, man. That's why he couldn't get into shape. The Nets aren't playing him. They are not playing him. He is not getting into game shape. So all they are doing is literally all he was doing for September, for October, for November, and for parts of December in Philadelphia. This is all he should have been doing that whole time, is what he is doing now for Brooklyn. It's not like they're playing him into games as people do when they come back from injury. You know, he's been working up, but we've got to get him back into game shape. They can't get him back into game shape because they're not playing him in games. So something just doesn't make sense with any of this. It's not about the Sixers not putting him into games, why he's out of shape. Because if the Nets can somehow get his conditioning back without playing him in games, why couldn't he have been in shape beforehand? That's on him. Maybe it's on the Sixers a bit, but I don't buy that. There is just something that just... Nick Stauskas was able to come over and be in game shape. Why couldn't Okafor? That is one of the things. And I think that you'll find that why there was very little interest in him, and this is a theory that I've posited across the NBA for a bit, is that, you know, the somewhat, at the time, limited return you saw for Paul George, limited return you saw for Jimmy Butler, which is, again, he's looking better now, is the fact that maybe these guys aren't the greatest blokes for different reasons. Locker room chemistry issues, calling out teammates, you know, Butler alienating other players, Paul George just being a general shit bloke, you know, Okafor, Noel being shit blokes as well, Derrick Rose being a shit bloke, that the NBA is putting a massive, massive emphasis on character of these guys. And it spreads from people, as if people don't know what Okafor's like through the league just because they're not in Philadelphia. That's a real interesting thing to me, the fact that he couldn't get in shape, but now 2 weeks of just running, which is all he was doing for 4 months, is going to magically get him into shape. And you can say, oh, he was pissed, but you know what? He didn't deserve to play in Philadelphia. He wasn't good enough to play. So it's not like he was this awesome player who they just wouldn't play because they were being petty. He was not good enough to play. And that is why he wasn't playing. So there's definitely stuff that doesn't make a huge amount of sense. And again, how's he going to get into game shape without playing games? So any thought of using the game shape excuse is just rubbish. It's just a load of shit. So it's going to be interesting to see when he comes back. But there's definitely something weird going on with that whole Okafor situation. So that's my thoughts on Jahlil Okafor. Let's move into DFS now. On FanDuel, the perfect lineup. Chrissy Dunn, 54.4. Sindarius Thornwell, 31.2 out of the blue. The Duke, Wayne Ellington, 32.7. And Devin Booker, 45. Joshy Richardson, 37.9. While Yanni Adetokounmpo had 44.4. Maxi Kleber, 48.6. Kelly Olynyk, 43.4. And Andre Drummond, 47.1. For a total of 384.7. And that cost $59,900. On DraftKings, Dunn had 52. Booker, 48.25. Toby Harris, 45. The Table, Montrezl Harrell, 36.25. Powell had 41.5. Lowry had 45.5. Olynyk, 43. And Maxi Kleber, 43. For a total of 353.5. And that cost $49,400. Now, on yesterday's podcast, talked about FanDuel pricing issue over on Basketball Monster, because FanDuel's apparently introduced a new contest, the Starting Five, and this jacked everyone's prices completely out of their assholes. They are absolutely flying now. On our Basketball Monster, we have an auto-import thing for pricing on FanDuel. It was all fine this morning. Ken went off to bed, and then the pricing reverted to the Starting Five. So I've got the same situation. So we're going to have to change our processes over on Basketball Monster. We thought we'd fixed it, but then later in the day, it's reverted, and all the prices have gone to these jacked-up Starting Five prices. So tomorrow, we'll go back to FanDuel pricing when discussing the majority of the slate. We're going to stick with DraftKings today, and when Ken wakes up in a few hours' time, and well, by the time most of you are listening to this over on Basketball Monster, the FanDuel pricing will be updated, but they have definitely thrown a spanner into the works with their change in pricing structure in that different type of contest. Let's talk about this again from a DraftKings perspective on today's show. The first game I'm going to look at, the Dallas Mavericks and the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers are favored by 5.5, and the total is 204.5. Thankfully for this day's worth of games, at this point, we don't have too many unknowns in terms of injury. At point guard, Corey Joseph at 3,700. Don't hate throwing him into a GPP if they do make that change and start him over Daz Collison. But remember, he's not a high points per minute guy, averaging under 24 per 36 over his last five games. So he's not a huge one. But at that price, there is definitely some value there for Corey Joseph. And he could get 25 or 26, which does make him interesting, especially if we hear that he's been announced as a starter. JJ Braz at 5,000. I feel pretty confident that he's going to get 25 almost every game that he goes out there at the moment. So I do like using him quite a bit. And he's got a decent amount of upside. Well, Daz at 5,500 has really been struggling with just a 22-point average over his last five. He is a tough one to rely upon. Oladipo at 9,100. So that's a price drop. It's fine. I'm not into him in cash. I think in a tournament, that is fine. A back-to-back, I guess he's well-rested after that game against Detroit, but I'm still not... I just feel like it's too high. I know how good he's been, but it just feels too high when there are other options out there. Dennis Smith at 51 is obviously just a tournament flyer. At shooting guard, 4,300 for Lance Stephenson. There's a possibility that he gets more minutes as part of a shakeup. He's been decently consistent with his numbers recently anyway. 21.8 average over the last three at 4,300. It's not too bad. I don't mind him as a tournament guy here. Bogdanovich at 43. I just don't really feel much positivity towards him. Wes Matthews the same. At small forward, you've got the pencil 6,600. I think it's a solid cash play with a really high floor, but a limited ceiling. So he's okay for cash. Well, Thaddeus Young's at 57. He's really struggling. No interest. Power forwards, Dirk's at 48. He's been crushing it, Dirk. The worry I have here is this is a second half of back-to-back. Now, he's played in a few back-to-backs this season. It is a really good matchup for Dirk, and he's averaging 34 over his last three, really putting up the numbers. I wouldn't feel comfortable in cash, but there's definitely some tournament upside there. He gives you the 35 or 36. That's definitely smashing through that value. Dwighty Powell, nah, not really. Domantas Sabonis at 54, no. At center, Miles Turner loves playing Dallas, averages 40 points against them. He's at 6,700. Struggled today, but I think he's in for a bounce-back performance here. So not a cash one, but a GPP type of a situation. So I do like looking at Miles Turner there. Let's look at the Boston Celtics and the Charlotte Hornets. The Celtics are favored by one. The total is 206. At this point, Marcus Morris is out. Jaylen Brown is doubtful. Semi Ojeleye is doubtful. And Michael Kidd-Gilchrist for the Hornets is questionable with an illness. So there is going to be some opportunity in this game for many things. And I do like attacking this game, cash and for tournaments also. At point guard, Kemba is down to 6,600 on DraftKings. That is stupendously low. He has comfortably got 40, 45 point upside here. So I really, really like Kemba Walker at that salary. And I know the Celtics have been pretty good against point guards, but at that price, it's really tough to go past Kemba Walker. Kyrie's at 8,500, and while he's fine at that price, I think there is a level of blowout risk here, and there are other guys around that I would much rather spend that money on than Irving. The other guy we want to have a look at here is Terry Rozier, 4,600. With Jalen unlikely to play, with Marcus Morris out, that's going to move Marcus Smart up a position. So Terry Rozier is going to be able to push towards 30. At 4,600, he's got that 35-point upside. So I think he is a strong cash and tournament guy. At shooting guard, Smart's at 52, but really the shooting does make him a tougher cash play. But there is something there, not amongst my best picks of the day. Well, Nick Batum is down to 5,400. Historically, over the last three games, he's averaged 45 against Boston, which is obviously great. He had 33 in his last outing. I think he's worth looking. I think he's worth using. Just forget looking at it. I think he's worth using here at that price. Well, Jez Lamb at 4,900. If Kidd-Gilchrist out, you smash that. Otherwise, I think he's just more of a tournament guy. At small forward, Kidd-Gilchrist, 4,100 is nice, but no. Jason Tatum, I love at 5,600, just refuses to miss this guy. I think that he is almost a lock for 25 points, and then you get a little bit more on top of that, which is fine for cash with that tournament upside there. I don't like Marvin Williams. At power forward, who have we got? Vanilla Tice, 3,600. Wouldn't be shocked if they moved him into the starting lineup or if he played more minutes than Bainsey. But I'm not sure if his upside is really high enough at 3,600. There's something there, but it's not a great, great play. While Al Horford at 6,800. Dwight Howard could be a concern for Al, and he's been a little bit down recently, averaging just 31 over the last five. Probably a fade situation, and Frank the Tank at 41. Look, he's got a little bit of upside, so if he's in a tournament, I wouldn't hate it. I don't love it, though. At center, Dwight, 7,200. Absolutely love this. He had 48 in the last game. 7,200 is not a high price. The Celtics have struggled so much with the rebounding. We know that's one of Dwight's strengths. I'm in on Howard here at 7,200, one of the best values of the entire day. The next game we will crack onto, it is the Washington Wizards and the Atlanta Hawks. The Wizards are favored by 5.5, and the total is 213 here. We don't know the status of Mike Muscala. He's one other one of those guys, been out for about a month with an ankle injury. He has been upgraded to questionable. He's been training or practicing with the Erie Bayhawks, so he should be close to being ready to go, but I don't think he's going to play too many minutes. At point guard, Dennis Schroeder, 7,300. The John Wall defensive issue is an issue. He has struggled against Wall in the past. Tournaments only for Schroeder. Well, Johnny at 8,900. That's a significant price bump, but he has done very well against Atlanta in the past. 8,900 is probably just a little bit too high, and I'm not really feeling overly excited about that. At shooting guard, Beal, 7,400. Had 40 points on Christmas in 40 minutes, and he does well against Atlanta. I think at 7,400, that is fine for cash. And it is actually a tournament play as well. While Oubre at 47 is a pass, Taurean Prince, the artist formerly known as, he's at 5,800. The numbers for him have been a little bit down lately, but I actually don't mind him here. Otto Porter, Kelly Oubre defensively can be quite tough to deal with. So that probably leans me towards formally being more of a GPP guy rather than a tournament guy. Well, Kent Bazemore at 6,200 is too expensive for my tastes. At small forward, Porter's at 5,900. Now, I've said plenty of times I don't really love Porter for DFS, but at 5,900, now he's 53 the other day, which is great on Christmas, but at 5,900, I feel pretty good about him getting to 30 for cash. Not sure of his upside, but I do like his reliability. Markieff's at 47 and Ilyasova's at 48. You could take either of those guys only for a tournament. If I was taking one, it would be Ersan Ilyasova. At power forward, the Baptist, John Collins, 5,600. I feel like that's not bad for cash. I feel like he's got that 25-point floor. I know he only had 21 in the last game, but I think that he's a 25-point guy. The problem is with 10 other games on, there are guys who are a little bit more reliable, so probably a fade, whereas Mike Scott's not someone you can rely upon. Had some hot games, but then he had 7 in the last one, so he's up and down. Definitely a tournament-type winner, and that's about it. At center, Plumlee, Gortat, Jan Mihinmi, nothing really gets me excited there. Gortat was good on Christmas with 34 points. At 5,600, though, I'm not willing to spend that sort of money on someone who could very easily play 22 minutes and do jack shit. The next game, the Toronto Raptors and the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Thunder are favored by 3.5, and the total here is 210 points. Point guards, Kyle Lowry, 7,600, a big, big dip, and he had a monster against Dallas. The only thing I guess you look at is coming off a back-to-back, is that somewhat of a concern? I don't really care. I'm in on him at 7,600. Russ is at 11,200. We love what Russ has been doing. He's averaging 64 over the last three. 11,200 is quite expensive. I would feel okay about using him, though, but there are a lot of other guys that you can consider on this 10-game slate. But the way that Russ has been playing, it makes it interesting. The only thing is that the Raptors have quite a good defense against point guards. Hasn't mattered to Russ in the past, averaging 63 points the last three times he's taken on Toronto. So I think he's fine for cash and for tournaments. DeLon's at 38. Not really seeing much there. Ray Felton, Fred VanVleet, no. Shooting guard, Andre Robertson, 3,700. He was brilliant in that Christmas Day game. 32 points based all on defensive numbers. Really hard to rely upon that. So that's more of a tournament play than a cash guy. While DeMar DeRozan's at 8,200. And he struggled in today's game, only 23 points, but prior to that, he'd been getting 40 on a lot of those nights. I think he's okay for cash, but I think his upside is probably a little bit limited. At small forward, I love Paul George here, and that's mainly because of this price. 7,100, he's done very well against Toronto in the past. He's averaging 40.5 over his last three. The shot was falling on Christmas. He looked a lot better. At 7,100, there's tournament upside for 55 or 60. He's also got a decent enough floor, I think, that at that price you can use him. Mallow at 55, that price is appealing. He's been good lately. I just don't really feel super confident in Mallow. Too low of a floor, not high enough of a ceiling. The power forwards, Siakam, no. Ibaka's up to 5,900. He's been putting up close to the right amount of numbers for that, averaging 29 over the last three, 31 over the last five. But given the way that DraftKings pricing is so much lower, I want him to be giving me 34 or 35. So that makes him a little bit tougher to own and probably not the guy I'm looking at rostering. And then centers, you've got Steve-O Adams down at 5,700. Bang, that's in. Lock it. Really, really happy with that. That feels like it's almost a 30 every time for Steve. He can have 45. I really, really like that. Valanciunas at 47. I just don't know how he's going to go. If he has to switch onto George or Mallow or Westbrook, that could be a problem, and his minutes could get limited. So maybe we see an increase in Jakob Poeltl's minutes. But regardless, I'm not relying upon Jonas Valanciunas here. The next game we take a look at, the New York Knicks and the streaking Chicago Bulls. The Bulls are favored by 1.5, and the total is 208 points. At point guard, Frankie Ntilikina is at 3,800, just putting up nothings at the moment. 12 points in his last five on average. In a tournament, sure, we've seen lots of point guards go off against the Bulls, but you cannot rely upon Ntilikina in cash, the same as you can't rely upon Jarrett Jack at 4,500. Chris Dunn, though, 7,200. Bang. Look, just really get involved with Chris Dunn on this one. I think he had 52 today. He's averaging 37 over the last five. I feel really good about him putting up another monster against the Knicks. Well, Denzel Valentine's got that weird point guard small forward designation. He is at 4,600, the Hammer. Has been decently good lately, but I don't feel super confident about him in this one. Courtney Lee at 51, that's as cash as it gets. Love Courtney Lee at that price. David Nwaba, not really all that keen on him. At small four, Justin Holiday, sorry, shooting guard, 5,300 for Juzza. Decent floor for Juzz, 22-point lowest score over his last five. That's not too bad, but I'd still probably consider him more of a tournament guy, and even then, not a super strong one. At small forward, you've got a trio of just delightful players, Lance Thomas, Doug McDirt, and Michael Beasley. Bees is up to 4,800. That's so unappealing to me, all three of those guys. At power forward, Porzingis at 8,600.
Porzingis.
Thank you, Stephen. 8,600 for Kristaps. Not quite at that level. I think he's a tournament-only guy, but I do like him for tournaments. Whereas you've got Enes Kanter, 6,800, just killing it, averaging 50 over the last three, 38 over the last five. But that price is a little bit high. That's a $700 increase from what he was on Christmas. We cannot rely upon him getting 34 minutes a night. He could play 26 or 27 in the next game. We just don't know how it's going to go. But I think against the Bulls, I'd feel relatively confident about him playing, unless they go to a Markkanen and Mirotić front court. And then he could be in a bit of trouble with that spacing. So if you're going to use Kanter as a GPP only. Larry Markkanen, 57. I don't see too much there. Mirotić is at 6,500. He had 38 today, so broke through that value. But again, my confidence level in him getting enough minutes on a consistent enough basis is not high. Punchwob's also a little bit high at 4,600. At center, Rob Lopez, 4,500. He's consistent. He's just consistent for a $3,800 player and not a $4,500 one. Let's go on to the next game. We have got the Denver Nuggets and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Again, you want to check the status of Nikola Jokic. If he is out, you'd be loading up on your Mason Plumleys, and maybe you get a bit of Ken Fareed in there, but probably not enough to really challenge too much. It's going to be more Torrey Craig, more Baby Nick, more Trey Lyles in there also, who's playing really, really well if Jokic happens to be suspended. I don't think he will be. At point guard, Jeff Teague at 6,100.
My name is Jeff.
He scored like 6 points in the last game and still put up 31 DraftKings points because he was of his assist numbers. He's been really consistent, averaging 31 over his last five. That makes him not a bad cash guy. We know his minutes really aren't going anywhere. So I think he's not a bad cash point guard, but really limited in terms of his upside. Whereas the other side, the blue arrow, Jamal Murray, we don't know what Dr. Malone's going to do. Will he play him 26 minutes? Will he play him 36 minutes? In 36 minutes, he smashes that. In 26, he probably doesn't come right next to it. So he is a GPP guy. And that's really about it. At shooting guard, Farton Will Barton's at 5,800. Just been atrocious. You cannot rely upon him for cash. Maybe in a tournament, but he has been in a week-long slump, or more than a week. Jim Butler's at 8,000. Love that for Jim. The minutes are there. He's playing really, really well at the moment. His lowest score in his last five was 26, but his average in those last five is 42. That shows you how well he's going. So I like him as a cash guy here. While Gaz Harris at 6,200 has been strong. I just think that's probably a little bit too overpriced for DFS. He's a much better season-long category guy than he is for DFS. Wigo's at 5,700. I think Wigo can drop a 40, and that makes him a tournament player. But I wouldn't want anything to do with him in cash. He's just not good enough to rely upon. Small forward eligible player, Trey Lyles, 4,400. I feel like he can ride him in for 25 every game, and that makes him a good cash play. Plus, he does have the ability to go out there for a 30 or a 35 if he gets hot. I like Lyles at 4,400. Really, really strong option. Baby Necks at 47. I think he's a good cash option with limited tournament upside. At power forward, Plumlee's at 44. Probably wouldn't use him unless Jokic is out. Otherwise, it's just hard to rely upon that. While Taj at 6,000. The return of Nemanja Bjelica might reduce Gibson's minutes by two or three, and that could put a dampener on him at 6,000. So that's probably a fade. Same with Gorgui Dieng, even though Dieng is only at 3,600. Jokic at 8,600, good opportunity for him against Towns. He averages 42 against Towns and the Timberwolves. At 8,600, that's okay value, but I'd only be looking at him as a tournament guy, whereas Townsie at 87, really rolling at the moment. He averages 56 against Jokic and the Nuggets, and I think a 50 burger is something that's definitely in Towns' sights here. So I would use Towns over Jokic in cash. I'd probably use Jokic over Towns in a tournament. Let's move on to the next game now. We have got the Brooklyn Nets and the New Orleans Pelicans. The Pels are favored by 10, and the total is 220.5. At point guard, Rajon Rondo, 5,600. I want zero to do with Rajon Rondo. His minutes have been reduced lately. Ian Clark getting more playing time over him. Spencer Dinwiddie's at 6,900. That's probably a little bit too high. I love what Spencer's doing, but not at that price. His numbers have been a little bit reduced, only averaging 29 over the last five. And at 6,900, that doesn't get it done. Holiday's at 7,700. His numbers have been a bit muted as well. Elvin Gentry's been, the Pelicans have been beating teams pretty comfortably. So he's been able to cut 2-3 minutes off guys like Holiday and Etuan Moore as well. And that's limiting what he can do, especially at that elevated salary. The blue swimmer, Alan Crabb, 4,200. Yeah, not bad. 22-point average over his last five, but really, is his upside high enough? I don't believe it is. If you want to feel good about him in cash, you can. Look, his five-game min-max, minimum score 20 points, maximum 24. So right in that range, you're going to get that most nights. I don't feel super confident with him, but given the way he's currently going, you could make that argument as a cash guy, whereas 5,200 for Caris LeVert, I'd much rather take him in cash, and I think he's actually got a higher upside than the Blue Swimmer as well. Etuan Moore's at 4,600. His numbers have dropped off quite significantly. He's not really doing it for me. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, 6,400. 27 in 27 minutes today due to that hip problem. But prior to that, he'd been rolling. I think he's really a strong cash option here and has some tournament upside. Well, Damari Carroll was horrendous at 5,300. He does have tournament value, but he wouldn't be the guy that I'd be looking towards. Love Tone Davis. Love Boog Cousins here. The Nets, we know that big men against the Nets have done real well all season. Paul Gasol and LaMarcus Aldridge both went off today for the Spurs. 11-5 for Boog, 10-8 for Tone. I think both of those guys, and you could even stack them in tournaments because they don't work independently of each other. They can have big games at the same time. And then at center, we've got Tyler Zeller, and we don't really need to get too deep into the Tyler Zeller weeds. The next game, we're talking about the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Sacramento Kings. Based on nothing, don't be shocked if Isaiah Thomas plays in this game. Now, it would be limited minutes, maybe 20 minutes, but don't be shocked if Thomas is back. I just get the feeling that he's just going to do the surprise return under the radar here, getting ready for the game coming up against his former team in Sacramento. Don't be surprised if Isaiah is back for this one. It's not going to be really too much of a DFS option, but just be aware. I think it could happen. The Georgie Hill's at 4,500. I think today it was limited by the blowout. Now, they could get absolutely spanked by the Cavs. I still think he's a decent play at 4,500 to at least get you around 24, 25 points. So I think he's not a bad option here. Well, Dwayne Wade at 52. If Thomas is back, that will impact him. Now, Wade's numbers have been good lately. I just don't feel super strong about using him. Jose Calderon, well, if Thomas is back, there's zero value there. And Frankie Mason's not really getting it done. Bogdan Bogdanovic at 4,000. Most of these Kings guys, it's all tournaments. Bogdan, Budrick at 5,000. Who knows what Jaeger's going to do on a nightly basis. Yeah, Budrick's the guy that can go out there and hit seven threes and return that value at 5,000, but you wouldn't want to rely upon them in cash. These Kings guys are really, really tough to use. The plumber, J.R. Smith at 3,900. That's got tournament value, but that's probably about it. At small forward, Jay Crowder's at 39. He's playing much better. At 3,900, 26 points in the last one. I can understand putting him into a pool, but he probably would be one of the first guys I'd take out of that. Well, LeBronald's at 11,700.
LeBron James.
The blowout's the factor here. So for cash, I wouldn't feel it. Same with Kevin Love. But they do have tournament upside, both him and Love. Other power forwards on the roster, Will Cauley-Stein at 5,600. I think that's pretty solid for cash, even though he did get dicked around as per usual. But I think he's pretty solid for cash. Well, Randolph's at 6,300, and I want nothing to do with him at that sort of a price tag, especially on a back-to-back and with how he played today. Not ideal, always that risk there. Zebo's former team, the Memphis Grizzlies and the LA Lakers. We know Lonzo Ball's out for the Lakers. Jermichael Green is questionable. Brandon Ingram is questionable. I think Ingram's on the probable side of questionable. And then Chandler Parsons should be back for Memphis. And if Green isn't ready to go, Parsons will likely get the start. Jordy Clarkson's at 5,600. He had 43 in that Christmas Day game against Minnesota, starting at point guard with Lonzo out. So I think he is a guy that you definitely lock in for cash. Andy Harrison's at 41. No. Tyreek's at 8,400. Love what Tyreek does. That is just too expensive to use in cash, I believe. Now, he's been crushing it, but I just can't get behind using that for cash. Well, Joshy Hart's at 45. If Ingram is out, I think that's fine for cash. If Ingram is in, it's really tough to get behind him using. Look, in that last game, he played 39 minutes and had 25 points, and he's not going to get 39 minutes if Ingram plays. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's at 5,300. He is a tournament-only sort of a guy. A decent matchup for him, but he is pretty streaky. Well, Ingram's at 6,100, and again, I would only be interested in using him in a tournament. Kobe Simmons, minimum salary, 17 points today at $3,000. Hey, you could put him into a tournament and maybe get 7x value. That's something that could happen, but I don't feel super strongly about using him, and I'm not keen on Corey Brewer or Jim Ennis or Dylan Brooks. At small forward, Green's at 4,700. Not really sure why he's a small forward eligible player. I don't think he's a good DFS guy. Well, the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, 7,400, just crushing it. I don't see any reason why it's going to stop, so I think he is in. Parsons at 43 probably can do better than that. At power forward, Who are we off a power? Larry Nance somehow listed as a small forward, power forward as well. Don't really understand that. Not interested in using him. Where's Julius Randle? He is at 5,200. He is at the mercies of the dicking of Lukey Walton. He still put up 27 in that last game in only 18 minutes. I feel like, despite the ridiculousness of the rotations with Randle, I still feel like he's a pretty good cash guy who does have tournament upside. So I think he's not too bad to use despite some of this ludicrous use of him. At centre, Marc Gasol's at 8,800. He is putting up numbers, 43-point average over his last five. 8,800, though, is probably just a little bit too high on a back-to-back. I don't think Mark's minutes are going to be cut or anything like that. I'm just not... That salary is just a bit too high for Gasol. It is a pretty good matchup for him against Bogut, against Randle. But I think that he'll struggle to return that sort of value. I'd want him at 78 rather than 8,800. Let's go on to the last game of the night. It's the Utah Jazz and the Golden State Warriors. Hal Neto is questionable with that concussion that's kept him out for a few weeks, while Andre Iguodala is probable with low back stiffness. We know Iguodala is probable. That probably means he's out. Doubtful means he's probably in, because the Warriors' designations tend to mean nothing. At point guard, the Don Mitchell, $7,000. Really just a tournament guy. I don't really feel super strongly about him or really anyone in this matchup for DFS. I don't think it's a great one to have a look at. Curry is out. So Shawnee Livingston, Pat McCaw, Quinn Cook will have a chance at those point guard minutes. I don't really like any of those guys here either. Ravishing Rick Rubio at 5,700. I don't see it for him either. Again, I don't really like much in this one. Jingling Joe's at 48, cash only, but even then, not feeling good. While Clay at 6,700 would be a tournament player who's been okay in Curry's absence, but not sensational. Rocket Rodney Hood's at 6,100. That's probably just a little bit too high. I'm not really sure his ceiling justifies that price. Small forwards. KD, 10,900. Now that I'm in on. That's fine. Total cash play, definitely worth a look in tournaments as well. But he does have a history of struggling a bit against Utah, but that's a different Utah. That's a Gobert-led Utah. That's a Gordon Hayward-led Utah. That's not the same team. So at 10-9, I feel okay about using Kevin Durant. Jonas Jerebko should start again at power forward, and he's a guy that could give the Warriors trouble. So at 3,600, he's worth a look in a tournament if we hear confirmation that he is starting again, which I assume he will. Draymond's at 75. I'm okay using Draymond. In fact, I prefer Draymond over Clay in this sort of a situation out of those Warriors guys. While Zaza Pachulia is going to start over Jordan Bell, and Bell's salary is at 4,900. That makes him pretty tough to use, in my opinion, especially for cash. We just don't know how he's going to slot into that rotation in terms of minutes. Derek Favors at 5,800. Had some decent-ish games, but I don't think the upside's really that big, and I think the downside is, especially in this sort of matchup, I'm a little bit worried about it. So overall, just not a game that I'm really super keen on for DFS purposes. Let's roll to the other sites now. On Yahoo for tournaments, take a look. In fact, there's a bunch of cash guys I like here. Corey Joseph for tournament, Frank the Tank, Vanilla Tice, Maxi Kleber, DeLon Wright, Josh the Hitman Hart are all some tournament upside type guys to use on Yahoo. For cash, it's Lance Stevenson, Mason Plumlee, Terry Rozier, Trey Lyles, Georgie Hill, Willie Cauley-Stein, Jordy Clarkson, Jim Butler, Nikola Jokic, and Boog Cousins. On Moneyball for tournaments, Jokic, we have got Budrick, Julius Randle, Domantas Sabonis, Lance Stevenson, David Wabba, Vanilla Tice, and Maxi Kleber. For cash, we've got Rozier, Georgie Hill, Jason Tatum, Will Cauley-Stein, Clarkson, Kanter, Kemba, Paul George, Kevin Love, Chrissy Dunn, Jim Butler, Russ Westbrook, Tone Davis, and Boog Cousins. And on Draft Stars for tournaments, we've got Marcus Smart, Lance Stevenson, Jay Crowder, Vanilla Tice. And for cash games, we got Terry Rozier, Trey Lyles, Georgie Hill, Nick Batum, Jason Tatum, Will Cauley-Stein, Gaz Harris, Jordan Clarkson, Brad Beal, Chris Dunn, Dwight Howard, Jim Butler, Porzingis, Towns, Jokic, Tone Davis, and Boog Cousins. Don't forget, make sure you are following me on Twitter at redrock_Bieber, where I'll put out the call for you guys to submit a question for the podcast and also to give me a suggestion to talk about in the player discussion portion of the show. Those tweets will go out, so make sure you're following me and I'll pick one player and one question to answer each day. Make sure you are following me on Twitter at redrock_Bieber, as I mentioned. And if you are listening to this on Apple Podcasts, subscribe and leave a 5-star review. You can also find us on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify, and on YouTube, where you can subscribe, give a thumbs up, and leave a comment below. Check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network and today's sponsor, Draft.com, and use that promo code LOFANTASY. We are done, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Trevor Booker.